We invited Glynis, an honorary Oakland Asian mom by way of Austin, Texas, to speak about her beautiful adoption story. Glynis was born in the Philippines and was adopted at the age of one by white parents at a Manila-based adoption agency. She shares sweet memories of how she learned about her adoption story, of feeling fully embraced by her family, and what it was like taking a trip back to Manila as an adult to the exact place where her parents first met her. She shares experiences of navigating potentially confusing situations when out and about with her white parents, and how 23andMe sparked some wonderings about her biological mother. Glynis also reflects on how having her own biological kids has sweetened family life too. It's easy to see how Glynis's journey has shaped her sense of self, her gift of graciousness, and her openness to being adopted by friends and diverse communities. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the Oakland Asian Mom Podcast.
Well, welcome everybody to the next episode of the Oakland Asian Mom Podcast. And today we are going national, do we call it when we're out of state?
I think so.
Yeah. So we invited our friend Glynis, who is representing Austin, Texas. And even though she's not an Oakland Asian mom, she has some roots here at Oakland. So we're inviting her to speak about a topic of adoption. And it's kind of beginning the first of a hopefully a series regarding this topic. So welcome, Glynis, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. So nice to be here.
Yeah. And we're going to ask you what we ask all our guests are. If you can describe your cultural and ethnic roots, where did you grow up? What places would you call home? And then how would you describe your partner and kids in terms of their race and identity?
Yes, ma'am. Well, let's see. If I'm asked, I definitely say I'm Filipina. Or Filipino. And I don't add the dash American part on there, but that's what I say. And I by now I'm definitely a Texan. I grew up, I was born in Manila and grew up there and was there until I was about eight. But I also after that lived in Thailand. In Bangkok and then in Hawaii for a couple years and then made our way over to Austin. And my dad moved around a lot because he was a demographer and worked doing like international aid / population studies. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of my friends growing up were like army brats and things like that. So I have a what's that term? Third coast or third
culture.
Third culture, mm-hmm. Yes. That term applies to me. And but yeah, I am Filipina and I call Texas home, definitely Austin. Austinites like to specify that it's Austin and not another place.
And why is that?
Please, well, you have a couple hours. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's just Austin is that what there's that saying, it's like a blue dot, right? In a red sea. Mm-hmm. But I'm here because I call this place home because this is where my parents still are. I'm so fortunate that my folks are, well, fortunate and unfortunate. I can get into that part later, but they're 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. And then this is where my children and my husband are too. And I met my husband in Austin and my kids were born up the street. And so everything's based here. And my partner, let's see, he's an Italian Texan. By birth, he was born in Illinois, but he moved to Waco, Texas when he was five. And both his parents are Texan, and have some pretty deep Texas roots, even though there's a bit of Louisiana mixed in there on his mom's side. But and then in terms of the kids, we use the term Hapa a lot just in conversation here, not with the kids, but like there's just a number of half Asian, half white kids in our midst, and we'll see these Hapa babies and it will just say, oh my goodness, Hapa babies. Mm. And we'll just use that term a lot. But my kids, they are aware of, I mean, my children are 5 and 6 and a half, and they don't seem to, they don't verbalize race or things very much yet. And we've gone to some, the Filipino community, there's probably different branches of it, but the branch that I've sort of glommed onto, they have potlucks every once in a while. And I've brought the kids to one and I say, hey, you're Filipino, this food's great, right? And so they just are like, yeah. I mean, I don't think they really know what I'm talking about, but, but they like the food. And then sometimes we're like, you know, you're Italian, we're going to go to Italy sometime. And so we talk about that. Oh. And then we talk about, hey, you're Texan, because we'll drive by on the way to whatever, we'll drive by where both of them were born. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot of different names being thrown around out there. Mm-hmm.
What generation is your husband in terms of his family?
Ooh, I'll probably get it wrong, but I think his parents, his father's Sicilian, and I believe his grandparents were the first to move. Mm-hmm. Grandparents are great, mm-hmm. not too far back, okay. But they came through Galveston and settled in Houston area. And then his mom, yeah, Texas through and through with, well, and then maybe a generation back, I think on her father's side, there's the Louisiana part.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, they have some accents for sure.
So Glynis, Cheryl mentioned that you have a little bit of a history in Oakland and you are here for graduate school. So what is something that you miss about Oakland being out in Texas?
Oh man, it goes without saying the weather, but the thing that Oakland, you know, grad school was kind of like on fire for me. Like it was a very tumultuous time. I was getting out of a huge relationship and grad school in and of itself is like, can be very, it was so difficult, you mm-hmm. know? And I do have roots in the Bay Area. My mom's oldest sister, who was alive at that time, she was kind of, her health was about to decline, but it was such a wonderful opportunity to be able to be with her mm-hmm. in that stage of her life. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like the grad school was just a vehicle for me getting to the Bay Area so that I could spend time with her. And of course, meet these amazing people that I love so much, you know, Cheryl and the cohort. I mean, she's an honorary member of our class. And these are people I'm still in touch with and, you know, can comfortably text randomly and then ignore for months and then another text, you know. The thing that really opened my eyes by being in the Bay Area was like, and on campus was like, there are hella Asians here. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't used to that. I mean, mm-hmm. well, obviously mm-hmm. I grew up in Asia, but there was a long period where I had some of my closest friends are Asian, but we were in the minority for sure in Austin. And then, you know, I spent most of my, pretty much all my 20s in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, which is, you know, mostly Mexican. Yet I would cross paths with the four Filipinos in town randomly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I bought a vehicle, a truck from one, like who knew that was going to happen? It was sitting on his lawn and I bought it. And I had to, he taught me how to drive stick. And like from the time I turned on the ignition to when I backed out, like that was my first lesson. And I mean, it's just like, what the hell is going on? But that's how I learned how to drive stick, by buying a truck, a Ford Ranger from this Filipino guy.
Oh, wow. But, it came with the lessons too. Wow.
Yeah,
amazing.
I know. Like, you know, 45 second lesson, but it's all on the job training for sure. But yeah, I mean, the Bay Area was, and that's one thing that was truly incredible is to be like, there are so many Asians here. Mm-hmm. And gosh, what was it called? PASS, right, Cheryl?
Mm-hmm. That, Filipino Academic Student Services. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of, I kind of gravitated towards that, even though it was mostly undergrad. And it was the most eye-opening thing to talk with someone and Tagalog came up. And I was like, I cringe. And I was like, well, I don't speak Tagalog. I speak Spanish. She's like, me too. And I date Mexican guys. And she's like, me too. And it was just like, God, this is great. You know, I just felt like such a weird unicorn anomaly, you know, cobbling together what the different identities I wanted and mm-hmm. and that were there already internally. And then I go to the Bay Area and it's just like, hey, man, there's such a continuum of Asians here. It's going to blow your mind. And it sure did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But tonight we're going to talk about your experience being an adopted child. You know, what do you remember about the time your parents told you about your adoption story? Or you can even tell us, like, you know, the beginnings. Yeah.
And, you know, my I know it's not a totally unique situation, but it is a little different in that I was adopted. I was born in the Philippines and then I lived in the Philippines until I was about 8. So I feel like that's a little different than, you know, I hear, and I'm so fascinated by a lot of the stories of interracial adoptees, you know, that come from Korea or come from China. And then they end up in like the Midwest or something, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But for me, my experience was really, and for my parents are white. My dad, so that's another Bay Area thread in my family history, is that my parents met in the Peace Corps and training. They were like the second class of the Peace Corps and they served in the Philippines, but their training where they met was at San Francisco State, they like their training was there. And then they both went, you know, in their group to the Philippines, like class of 62 or so. Mm-hmm. And I think that living there was so interesting to my parents that they came back for grad school to the US, but then my dad wanted to do research in Southeast Asia. So that's kind of, I mean, I think year for year, they lived in Southeast Asia longer than I did, I have an older brother who's also adopted. He's Filipino also. We're not biologically related. He's about 5 years older than me. And they adopted us from like a Catholic, it's called Heart of Mary Villa. It's a Catholic, it's a place, well, to put it kind of bluntly, it's a place where, oops, someone got pregnant, so hang here for 9 months or so. And I think the encouragement was, you can keep your baby or you can leave it here and we'll safely adopt it out internationally. Mm-hmm. And I had a wonderful opportunity when I was 28. So I'd been gone for 20 years because I left when I was 8. I went back at age 28, right before grad school at Cal. And I went there and I went to the place where I met the lady who delivered me.
Oh my gosh.
It was really a trip. And I was just starting to explore some of those things. And I'm so glad I did that because actually there was some flood that ended up washing the, you know, destroying the building. And so they did move, but if I go back now, it's not the same place. It's different construction, everything. But yeah, I got to talk to a group of, it's really weird to be like in a group, in a room full of pregnant women and you're the only one not pregnant. It was really weird, but like there were all these young girls, you know, I'm not answering the question, but I got to talk to them and I think it was probably pretty trippy for them to be like, wow, this lady, you know, she's 10, mm-hmm. 15 years older than us. And I get to talk to her. But, so what I know about my, biological parents is that I think my biological mother was 19 and just got pregnant. But she, her father was killed in some sort of hunting or marksmanship accident or something. And anyway, her father passed away and she was, one of maybe 6 children and they were all younger than her and she needed to help raise her siblings. Mm-hmm. So she decided to have me there and to stay there. And then I was adopted out a little later than I think the typical age. I was already about 1 by the time my parents adopted me. And they had already had my brother and he was from there as well. Mm-hmm. Different biological family, but growing up, I just remember the words like, oh, you're really special. You're very, mm-hmm. very special. And they'd always preface it that way and say I'm adopted. And I didn't really know what that meant. But then when I finally understood It was just like, you know, that I think the vocabulary had a place in my brain. And then when the meaning finally showed up, it connected to the vocab. And then it was just like, this is what it is, you know? And let's see, I don't remember if we would go back to the orphanage, but my parents definitely still have a relationship with them. Like they send Christmas cards and letters and I think donations every so often. But the conversation, it's funny, it's sort of a I don't know what the word is, but it's so obvious that I'm adopted because they're white, that it's almost like, this is so obvious that we don't even have to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
And one thing that is a nice story that my mom likes to remember is that when she went to like back to school night for my kindergarten class or something, the teacher, you know, the teacher doesn't know what people's parents look like until they show up, right? Everyone has the assumption, obviously, that you'll look similar. And then my mom, you know, this like skinny blonde lady shows up and the teacher's like, oh yeah, I can tell you have the same smile. You both have the same smile. And I thought that was so sweet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, there were times growing up where, you know, especially in my preteen and just whatever awkward time last week where you're just like, God, we're such a weird family. We're weird, you know, because like right now, my dad is, it's been a long story, but his health is declining. He has Parkinson's and he just recovered from COVID. Finally, he got it. And that did a number on him. So he had to be hospitalized, not because of lung issues, but he was very woozy. And so physically the Parkinson's and the COVID just didn't get along. So he's, I've spent a lot of time visiting him at the hospital and then this rehab center that he's at. And there are times where, and I'll take my mom also just to like relieve her of the stress of driving in Austin. It's so stressful, so much traffic. It's just terrible. So we'll go and then we'll talk with the nurses or whatever. And I'm sure they're like, what? Okay, Philip, who's, you know, I'm sure they're like, yeah. Filipino nurse lady here. Okay. She's obviously this other white old lady's the wife of this patient, but, so they kind of look at me and then, you know, and then I'll kind of give them an assist by being like, mom, blah, 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 dad, blah, you know, and then they're probably just like, what? Okay, whatever, you know, but luckily there's like Angelina Jolie's out there that are famous and, you know, that kind of launched the whole like, hey, adoption, it's a thing. It happens. And look at this, you know, so. But yeah, I'm sure there are, every so often I'm just like, oh, weird family, you know, we're unusual, but maybe not so much. I mean, it's adoption is enough to be a topic in your podcast. So
yeah. Well, you know, do you still have any questions about your adoption story? Like what were some of the questions you had as a child once you became more like, oh, our family's not only really special, but a little weird too.
Yes.
And do you still have any lingering questions as an adult?
Well, kind of. I did do the 23andMe stuff.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did. Not long. Let's see. When did I do that? And then I ignore it because, you know, it's just like, oh, Sheryl Sandberg and her people are always emailing me, telling me like, you know, there are 23 new relatives. And it's just like, yeah.
Who's Sheryl Sandberg? The Facebook lady?
Well, I think she kind of spearheaded 23andMe. I don't know what she did?
Oh, okay.
Somehow related to that, but it was just like, oh, geez. You know, at first, like the first year after I had done the kit and I was just like looking obsessively and then I just stopped. And then every so often I get these things. But yeah, there's a young man out there that, well, we have like some 3% connection of DNA and the chart is like, he's like, I don't know the terminology. I don't understand once removed and thrice removed. And
all
it's just like a bunch of dots and lines, but he's like he has the strongest like connection, genetically to me. So Jonathan, if you're out there, he lives in Southern California. I messaged him through the thing and I was like, you obviously look like you're in college and so you're never going to read this, but call me, you know, let's talk. But yeah. So yeah, I'm curious, like I would love to meet my biological mother, but I also have a lot of apprehension. Cause it's just like, I know that's gonna, it, well, I feel like most things in life, once you kind of open that up for yourself, like,
yeah,
stuff rushes in. Yeah. And my bandwidth is limited just because, like, I'm feeling the sandwich generation very mm-hmm. hard right now, because mm-hmm. you know, my parents are old and my kids are young and I'm old and I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I need naps before dinner, after dinner.
Like, you got. Okay, well, so, I had a question, yeah. because, you know, just a little bit about media representation about adoption and the process, because, you know, I was a fan of This Is Us, and it was very cathartic because I would just like cry. I was just wondering if you saw it, or just like what, from a lens of someone who is an adoptee or adoptive parent, right? And as an older person, like, it doesn't seem like you're actively looking for your biological mother, but it's just a wondering, but this yes. character was actively looking. So I'm just curious of, like, you know, like, is the portrayal accurate? You know, is it too dramatic? Mm-hmm. Is it not dramatic enough? But okay, we could talk about that later.
Yeah, since I haven't seen the show, but I will say that the articles I've come across in, you know, the past couple years, I'm getting, it's building. Like, I read, oh gosh, maybe it was during the holidays. There was some great article I read where someone was like, it was some person that had like some terminal illness. He was adopted. He was sort of prominent. He was like a prominent historian or something for the White House. And anyway, he was on his deathbed and he finally found his biological mm-hmm. father. And his biological father, like, drove across the country with, you know, with the opportunity to say goodbye to this mm-hmm. person. And, you know, I think they spent like 2 days together or something. And I was just like, ah, oh, crap. I really should get on this, because I'll be really pissed if next year I decide to really engage in looking. And then I'll find out, like, oh crap, my biological mother passed away last year, whatever, you know, COVID, mm-hmm. who knows?
Yeah.
Or like, yeah. You know, and I don't know if someone mentioned this like at a happy hour or something, but it's like, you might run into her in Bay Area. Yeah, I mean, life is really weird. And mm-hmm. so I do feel, you know, especially just post COVID, and like, I see, you know, my kids growing up. So all the cliches about like, hey man, hurry up, don't blink. You know, mm-hmm. I really do mm-hmm. feel, I'm mm-hmm. starting to feel that. And so it's just like, you know, maybe this podcast timing was perfect, and after we log off, I'll just be like clickety click on my 23andMe and messaging all these people. But I really need to get on that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you speak very lovingly about your parents, and, you know, knowing that they spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, like, what was the conversation about them, you know, just nurturing your connection to being Filipina? You know, how did you do that as a child? And then even as adult, you mentioned a little bit about being part of some like meetup groups just to have connections yeah. like locally. But do you remember anything that your parents did to kind of nurture that identity? You know,
they really didn't do much. They never forced it. Maybe because I don't know why they weren't like, hey, let's go do this thing or go eat here. But maybe it's because they lived in Southeast Asia mm-hmm, so long mm-hmm. that they were just like, do it, don't, I don't know. And, you know, I did feel like I gravitated very, very strongly after undergrad to Mexican culture and mm-hmm. Texas Mexican culture very strongly. And, not even after undergrad, it was during undergrad, because I wanted to knock out my foreign language requirement. So I did some study abroad in central Mexico. And then, like, you know, I was 19. So I did all kinds of other bad things and really got into it by living there and, you know, just living the life and running around as a 19-year-old would. And so I just love Mexican culture. And it took a hold of me and it adopted me. And I wanted to be adopted by that. I just, everything about it. And then my parents were like, well, that's so interesting. You know, no wonder, you know, the Mexican connection to Philippine history. And I don't know, my dad would rattle off something and I would just be like, oh, Like,
it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's just, and what's not to like? I mean, the warmth and I was embraced by so.
Cheryl's holding a copy of The Latinos of Asia for our listeners.
Oh, dude. Yes.
Have you read this book yet?
No, I've heard of it.
Oh, okay.
Is it good?
Yeah. Sarah went to undergrad with the author. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then we saw him speak. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he signed our books.
Yeah, he did. Cool. I told him I was going to make my kids read this as they get older. And it says, cannot wait to hear your Filipino American stories. Always listen to your mom. She knows best. Oh my God.
You're like, put that in there.
Yeah, you put that in there.
That is awesome.
So sorry to digress.
Like 2, 3, 4 years
ago. I think in 2016, maybe.
Oh, okay. Wow. Has it been that long?
Time. Yeah.
2016.
See? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
I have to read that. Yeah. No, see how cool is that? So yeah, it's just, so they never really pushed it and they never, you know, I never felt like they dragged me anywhere or forced me anything. I do know, like, I didn't always feel comfortable just being like, I'm Filipino, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not even sure how comfortable I was as a younger person being like, hey, I'm Asian, everybody. You know, mm-hmm. I just like that identity. I think once I graduated from undergrad and maybe I was more comfortable exploring those things and comfortable being curious. I think the curiosity, I'd temp it down a little bit because I thought not that it would hurt my parents' feelings that I was curious, but it was just like, I kind of looked further and it was like, does that admit that there's something missing or I'm sad about or something's not right? And I was just like, no, you know, so, and now it's just like, what's up with that? So I'm much more comfortable, you know, exploring that stuff.
Well, it sounds like you're more grounded in who you are, right? As we get older, it just becomes okay.
Yes.
More of that acceptance.
Thank God.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. Cause we're so tired. We're doing other things that it's so hard to put that psychic energy and be like, oh my gosh, who am I? Even though I still have those questions like, who am I? What am I doing today?
Yeah,
who have I become after having children? Right.
And who put this on the floor? Who didn't flush the toilet? Oh my gosh. My kids don't flush the toilet. It's so gross. Yeah.
Oh, we don't flush here because we're in a drought. So I said, don't flush.
Oh yeah, I know.
I know. It's really sad.
Yeah.
So Glynis, this is a little off topic, but I know that there's, you know, a big Korean adoptee community, and I'm wondering if there is a similar Filipino adopted community in the States. And if so, have you connected with them at all?
I'm not aware. And I do have a deep, deep regret from high school where, again, these intersections in life, just maybe my life is, I don't know, got some weird, funky Filipino fairy charms in there. But there was a girl in my high school that in conversation, I found out was adopted from the same place I was.
Oh, wow.
Like, what the hell? And I mean, I actually forgot that 30 minutes ago, but, and what did I do? Ignore her and didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, shoot, I need to go back and find my yearbook and Google the hell out of her. But I don't know how, you know, I really refuse to get on Facebook, even though that would make that all happen probably. But yeah. Got to find Carmen. Yeah.
Carmen and Jonathan.
Carmen and Jonathan. Hi, guys. Yeah, I know these two. They probably know each other. But yeah, I mean, I haven't found that, but I bet, you know, gosh, you don't have to dig very deep on Google anymore to find anything.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, maybe it's not a huge community. I don't know. Cheryl, are you aware of that Filipino adoptee community?
No. The only adopted people in my family have been like interfamily adoptions, you know, like a family member,
like a niece and
like my dad's like cousins were adopted, but I think somehow they were like adopted because in the village, you know, like in that way versus foreigners coming in and adopting.
Yeah. There's actually every Christmas I get a newsletter emailed from Heart of Maryvilla where I was adopted from. And they, you know, they announce like, oh, we've had this many, oh, what's the term they use? Biological connect, they have a phrase for it, but like there are a lot of adoptees from Australia, like Filipinos that from there that lived in Australia, lived in New Zealand, lived all over the UK and all this stuff that come back and somehow connect. Mm-hmm. And actually, yeah, that's a fun fact my parents like to giggle about, is that there was some sort of holdup with the people that sort of eyed me before my parents met me, and they were Australian. Oh. So, but it didn't work out.
Uh-huh.
So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, I could have had a really some kind of funkier accent than I do now. But yeah, I mean, really, to answer your question, if I wanted to, probably the truest community of Filipino adoptees I could find would be tapping into Heart of Mary Villa's, you know, database back in there. And, you know, no, I'm just kidding. I can't do that. But yeah, I mean, I should connect. And actually, they've come a long way, because when I was 28 and went back for the first time, I remember kind of coyly asking, and they're like, well, you need to ask permission from the government, because, you know, her identity, that she, the protections for her identity, blah, blah. And now it's just like, I don't know. I think it's probably a whole lot easier, which is, again, another reason why I should kind of get up on this thing and explore it.
To look for your biological mother?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gosh, my biological father as well. I should dial him up.
So you kind of talked about, you know, situations where people seem puzzled by the relationship between your parents and you. Are there any other sort of misconceptions or stigmas that you've experienced as an adopted person or as part of a family where adoption occurred? And what did you sort of learn about yourself during these situations?
You know, I've been so fortunate that if anybody was uncomfortable or just super quizzical, you know, sort of taken aback by the nature of my personal history or how my family was composed, they hit it well. Nobody's, you know, I can't really recall. And yeah, and looking at the preview of the questions, that was one I was just like, oh, I'll get back to that one. But I can't think of anything now. You know, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Unless I've repressed something crazy, but no, no, I can't think of, you know, I just feel like maybe, I don't know, so much of my personality, I try really hard. And also it's quite effortless for me to try and make people at ease. That might be a very Filipino thing, but
oh yeah,
it's like, right?
Yeah, totally. It is in the
just
blood.
Like, so if, you know, if people have been weird or curious, I guess maybe they've asked me, but yeah, it's, I haven't come across that yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my kids too, they haven't been like, how come mom looks like, grandma looks like this and you look like that? I mean, they just, grandma's grandma, and she has a jar of dum-dums by the front door. Like, that's all they know. I feel so bad. I think they just think my mom's a lollipop provider, and, you know, but like, yeah, their minds are not there yet.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, and my parents are aging. They're both, they both turned like 81, 82. And I do hope that we can all still, by the time my kids really crest that hill of being interested and curious and you know, about why, you know, I look like this and my mom looks like that, and how come Uncle Johnny looks like you but not, you know, my brother. I hope that those things can all come together, but there's photographs for that. If that's so grim, I'm like, if someone dies and they're not there yet, my kids, we can just look at pictures. But no, I mean, my hope is that, you know, we can, it will be very natural, just like the way my parents were like, hey, you're adopted, before I really understood what that was.
Have you talked to your children about being adopted yet? Or
I did. I think the first time it's come up was probably in the past year, where I just said, you know, grandma and grandpa, you know, I had a mommy and daddy, and I, you know, I use all those basic terms, but I basically said that, yeah, someone came out, you know, I came out of someone's vagina. Person. We talk about vaginas a lot in this house. And, you know, I explained like, yeah, you know, someone gave birth to me, but then grandma, that she couldn't, she had to do other things and was so busy and had a hard time with babies. So mm-hmm. grandma and grandpa came and, you know, and they seemed like cool. Like they didn't keep asking me questions, prodding, you know? And I'm glad, you know, I guess if you just break it down in the simplest of terms, it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, having my own kids, biologically was something that was, I think, such a gift from my mom mm-hmm. because she'd never been pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She'd never gone through, she's never, you know, held a sonogram in her hand or anything like that. And, but it wasn't like, you know, we're standing around with her hand on my stomach and like, we're rubbing it and no, we didn't do that, but we, you know, but she, and I think, yeah, I invited her to, the sonogram, one of the more interesting, you know, I think mm-hmm. there's in the early sonograms, like they're like, oh, you know, this thing and that thing and these milestones. And then after a while, it's just like, oh God, I got to get back to work, you know, but I invited my mom to one of the early ones and that was a lot of fun for her.
Oh, that's
so that was
special.
A really nice, yeah, it was a wonderful experience to share with her. And I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah, I didn't even ask about, it just makes me more curious about what your parents' story was, you know, like, how did they decide to adopt? You know, I don't know if it is like it was an intentional thing or if it was like, oh, you know, we really have a heart for it. Because I know there are families who decide, yeah, we want biological children and we also want adopted children too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They, you know, the family history for the Langs is that I think it was something my dad really wanted to do. He studied population. Well, he studied birth control, like family planning in Southeast Asia was actually, you know, what he studied, and birth rates and different use of contraceptive. Like I remember, you know, when you're, you know, back in the day, it's amazing that as children, like we didn't have iPads or anything. And you just have to like lie around on the floor and look at the bookcase and pull out books and, you know, wonder what. And then I pull out these books and it was like cervical mucus. What? Like, what's this? There's like all these photographs of someone's finger with this mucusy thing. And, like, and I'm just like, this is what? I'm going to keep looking at it.
Well, no wonder you say vagina in your house a lot. It's just like the family stories.
Yeah. I mean, like, so, you know, his whole interest was family planning and, mm-hmm. you know, women having control of how and when and all these things. And how cool is that? Right. He's very uncool in a lot of other ways, but that was pretty cool. But he, you know, I think he really wanted to adopt children that were already present. And,
yes,
and that's very cool. And I don't know about my mom, you know, I don't know if, I'd be curious. I wonder if she'd actually like, can she have any? I don't know if they even ever tried. Mm-hmm. I don't think so because, you know, like they're Peace Corps volunteers. They came from this generation of people that really wanted to do and change things and explore things, you know, and hey, it's probably not a bad gig being like good looking white people in this Southeast Asian country, like living the life, you know, like, like there's these great photographs, but it's just, you know, now I know that there's like the Peace Corps, there are alternatives to the Peace Corps that are probably, I don't know, there's issues with the Peace Corps of like, you know, these white saviors coming to do this work or, you know, let me show you, I have a PhD in this and that. Let me show you how to do something, you know, I mean, that's a very crude way to look at it. I know a lot of people that had wonderful Peace Corps experiences, but it's just like, how much did you give to your host countries and how much did you take?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's another podcast entirely, right?
Your parents do sound pretty cool. Like at least like,
my mom is, yeah, she wears cat sweaters, but yeah, she's okay.
Or sort of like unique of that generation, you know, kind of seems maybe a little like, 60s countercultural, little like those elements, but
And they were a little on the older, you know, they weren't like, you know, when you think about like the 60s, you see all these like hippie type, they're a little too old to be those kind of hippies. Cause I think they're already in their, they had already finished undergrad, you know, in the late 60s. So they were still pretty like black, you know, skinny black tie and very formal people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they were second generation of the Peace Corps, second class. So that's pretty old, 62 or so. Yeah.
Wow.
So Glynis, how has your adoption story sort of shaped how you view community and family?
Well, I find that, you know, I definitely glom on I would love to be adopted by anybody. I have a really cool Filipina friend in town, and her parents, they're from North Carolina, but her parents who are from North Carolina come and visit often. And I'm so honored that sometimes they ring me up and they're like, hey, let's hang out. And my parents are in town, let's go eat. And I just love it. And they're so sweet. And I feel like, you know, I'm okay to be a sort of adopted by different people's parents. I remember as a kid growing up, I loved, you know, spending the night at other people's houses and wanting to stay there forever, you know, because it's just so cool. And I think, that's a good skill. I think it's, you know, I'm open to be embraced by some other people's parents for a bit. And, you know, if there are any people that want to authentically, you know, befriend me, embrace me, and the feeling is mutual, then that's great. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate, the acronym is crazy long because there's a lot of A's in it, but it's like the Austin Asian American Association. It's like A. But it's just like, it's like the Austin, it's like the Asian Cultural Arts Center that is run by the city of Austin, but man, they do such cool stuff. And I make sure that we go to all their things. I want my kids to see other Asians, see people that look like their mom, and, you know, there's always food at those things. So like, we always love attending that, and it's always a good time.
So Glynis, for our closing, Cheryl, do you want to do it?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. We have guests share their Asian mom superpower and their Asian mom saying, our favorite Asian mom saying, and you wanted to do both of them. So why don't you let us know?
My superpower is not surprising, because it's like, I think it's a common superpower, but I bring the best snacks to any event. Best candy. Yes, I bring the candy. But like, who doesn't love Asian candy from the Asian grocery store? It has a lot of packaging, unfortunately. But
yeah, so much packaging, know, and so many of the desiccant things, you know?
Yeah. Do you recycle those?
Can you?
I sometimes put them.
I thought you could throw them and there.
Like, yeah, you can. I always keep them, and I put them in drawers or suitcases. Put them in suitcases because sometimes your suitcase gets smelly or, I don't know, moldy.
Dampness.
There.
Yeah.
We need to do some research.
What to do with them?
How do you dispose responsibly?
I bring the best snacks, and I bring snacks when no one else has thought of snacks. It's a good superpower. And they're not always Asian. Like, we love, you know, our goldfish and all those things. The goldfish pretzels, excellent. And then my favorite Asian mom saying is only unique to me because it's not an Asian language, but it's Spanish. And in our household, a lot of times we're just like, ay, Dios mío, what happened here? Excuse me, we say ay, Dios mío a lot. Because there's a lot of
those moments.
So I just look around me and like, my camera has to face this utility room closet, because you don't want to see the splendor of ay, Dios mío around my home. But that's a good, and I feel like that's so particular to me personally, just because, you know, speaking Spanish was such a gift that I was able to experience, to learn Spanish and learn Spanish in Mexico and then learn Spanish in Texas. And then use that term because it sure is useful. I'm not saying I'm Nicole yet, but I need to, I need to say that.
You need to buy a Santo Niño. Do you know what a Santo Niño is?
Those creepy little things.
Yeah. So that.
Where do I put it?
Anywhere you want. I have my little altars in my, on my fireplace.
Sorry, I didn't call them creepy, but.
No, they're creepy. They're creepy. Yeah. I don't have the picture of the Jesus. That's grandma style. That's like a two generation. No, I'm not going to put that one, but I do have these, like, you know, statues of Mary and all these kind of things. Nice, they're all sort of hand-me-downs for my mom because she has like way too many. Right? I was like, she has like 12. I'm like, you don't need all that many.
She put them like in a continuum. All of
yeah, yeah. But the whole thing was this, like, if you say, I just know, you could say, okay, well, at least, I don't know. It could they're little gnomes. You know, I guess they're like the Asian version of gnomes.
You know what? I'm going to buy. Yeah, that's going to be my signature Christmas gift. That's going to be cool. Amazon.
Yeah, Sarah, Santo Niños are like
go to the Catholic
the saint of the child, which is baby Jesus. Uh-huh. But like, it's like a weird, like a baby, like, Jesus, but all like in like formal wear or something. It's really weird.
Like he's going to prom.
Yeah,
like,
wearing a little tux.
It's like a little.
No, it's all like doilied out. Lots
of doily like vestments. Like vestments.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Is it a Filipino thing or a Catholic thing?
I think it's a Filipino Catholic. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't been to many.
For sure, Catholic. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Mexican households have it too.
I bet.
You bet.
I'm sure. That sounds so useful. I need some right away. There's a Catholic store in town. I'll go hit them up. But yeah,
get the 12 pack.
Yeah, I know. Again with the packaging, I'll bring those to my next snack thing, Girl Scouts.
Bless you, child. Here's some goldfish and a Santo Niño.
I know. And then those little Japanese gumballs where there's four to a box. What are those?
I don't know those.
Oh my, yeah. Japanese gum, you know, the one that loses the flavor.
Oh, like in two chews. Yeah, it's like,
but it's really good for 5 seconds. Good. Best snacks.
So Glynis, another question we have for you is, what did you learn about your own capacity for uncertainty this year?
Well, with the, I mentioned my, you know, being the sandwich generation and young kids and old parents, and it is really a gift and a blessing that everybody's within 15 minutes of each other, but that is a huge burden too. And like, I switched jobs within the last year, which really helped facilitate dealing with, like, oh my God, dad fell. Okay. Well, I'm so fortunate that I have a job that allows some flexibility, or maybe I'm just sneaking around really very well. And like, but I do appreciate like that there's not a lot of micromanagement at my job right now, because it's like, you know, this week I, you know, had to do this and that. And it's really not doing a whole lot. It's really just being present at a hospital or present at helping just drive someone to a doctor's appointment. That is doing something and it's time consuming, but my capacity for uncertainty is just like, there's going to be hella uncertainty tomorrow and next week, and you know, and it's okay. And it's really forced me to rely on my husband in a way that I am still I don't let my husband load or unload the dishwasher because I don't like the way he does it. But then what is wrong with me? But do I complain about having to load and unload the dishwasher all the time? Cause yeah, like I probably look like the Santo Niño sometimes, all like all, you know, overcome with my vestments and my martyr syndrome. But I really had to rely on him because it's like, well, I'm going to be dealing with my parents for probably the next, you know, who knows how long ER and all this stuff, like it's going to be at least 4 or 5 hours. And he's like, cool, no problem.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Sometimes it's just like, can you go pick my dad up off the bathroom floor? So, cause he's very heavy and like my mom, my husband's been dispatched over there a couple times, but yeah, I've had to really rely on him and he rises to the occasion so wonderfully. And in fact, my parents seem to trust him more than they trust me. They definitely listen to him more than they listen to me. You know, I'll have an opinion about, I really think you should take an ambulance to the ER instead of have me come drive you. And they'll be like, no. I think if we could just get a ride from you or David. And then Dave will be like, I'm not driving him to the, no, hell no. Like, this is of course not, you know, hang up. And then he'll call back and I'll just be like, David thinks you need an ambulance. And they'll be like, okay. So yeah, relying on him and really the tag team in a marriage, God, it's critical right now. And I hate to see how it's going to be critical even after this part of, you know, my experience with my parents, you know, then someone, I don't know, our kids will pick our nursing home. I better be nice to them and get them a glass of water. Because,
well, yeah. They see how you're taking care of your parents, then that makes a huge imprint what it means to take care of family when you're old, right? Mm-hmm. It's like an investment in our own future.
It is. Yeah. And you got to show them like, see what I do?
Exactly.
Who knows what things are going to be? Gosh, by the time we need all those, oh, how scary. It'll be all robots running around caring for us, right? You guys have those running around?
Send the drone. Downtown? Send the drone.
I know. I haven't seen a drone deliver anything, but there's a, near my office, there's a little robot on wheels that delivers like breakfast tacos.
Yeah, I see. Oh, wow. I've seen one of those.
And it bumps into things. It's hilarious. I don't think it's very well programmed. It's new, but... But you guys have those things?
I've seen them in Berkeley. Yeah.
Oh, really? Of course.
But, you know, in 20 years, they'll be tending to us. So
I know.
Be kind. I've seen,
I know, like I know. Robots that are like security around parking lots. I've seen that.
Really? Oh, probably with just cameras roaming around.
That's Oh, that's right. At the Food Max, there's that robot. Gosh. Yeah. Well, we're so grateful that you made time to chat with us.
Oh my gosh, of course. Yeah. This is such a pleasure. Such a pleasure. I have to watch all the other episodes. Because this podcast is truly special.
Oh, thank you, Glynis.
Yeah, always thanks for listening. Yeah. We appreciate you.
Take care and don't forget to call your mom.